Bank.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Doug Tingvall. My wife and I are the plaintiffs in this case, U.S. Bank's the defendant. This case, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes, please. This case comes before this Court as well as the Superior Court in a little bit of an unusual procedural context. Normally, the creditor is the plaintiff and the defendant is the one asserting the statute of limitations as an affirmative defense. Here we have the opposite, because what happened over a period of many years as U.S. Bank and its predecessors had many false starts on non-judicial foreclosures that were stopped either by injunctions issued by the Superior Court or voluntarily by the trustee. Actually, four separate starts, false starts, that missteps were taken by the trustee and or the bank. So then there was a foreclosure, non-judicial foreclosure pending. We brought this action to seek an injunction against that foreclosure and to also declare that the note and subsequent deed of trust were unenforceable by virtue of the statute of limitations. The trustee discontinued the non-judicial foreclosure so that part of the injunction aspect of it became moot, and so the bank asserted a counterclaim after the expiration of the statute of limitations, asserting a judicial foreclosure, seeking affirmative relief. So here we have the positions of the parties in effect have been substituted and reversed as a result of the changing of the hats. In other words, the bank is asserting an affirmative claim for judicial foreclosure, and the plaintiffs have asserted an affirmative defense of the statute of limitations. So let me get to the statute of limitations, but I wanted to emphasize that
your claim was filed before the statute of limitations.
Correct.
Ran, was it not?
Correct. And what the bank argues
and the
is
the counterclaim was filed after the statute of limitations.
And the bank filed no pleading prior to the expiration of the statute of limitations. That's a critical distinction, because okay, the case law in Washington with respect to relation back is that a pleading can relate back to that party's prior pleading. The bank in this case filed no pleading prior to the expiration of the statute of limitations.
That's a different issue. Here we're talking about whether, and it's not really relate back as much as it is whether or not the filing of your claim told the statute of limitations for purposes of filing a counterclaim. Isn't that more what we're talking about?
Not exactly. The way I would characterize it, Your Honor, is that the law in this state is, I think, clear, even though there was some conflicting authority earlier on, that an affirmative defense is never barred by the statute of limitations, but an affirmative claim is barred. And, of course, the reason for that rule is that, were it otherwise, an attorney could wait out the statute of limitations professional malpractice claim and then bring a claim for collecting unpaid fees after the 3-year statute of limitations for negligence has expired, but the 6-year statute of limitations for written contracts has not yet expired. And the client would be precluded from asserting the attorney's negligence or malpractice as a defense to the collection.
Doesn't it specifically hold that in this circumstance where a claim is a counterclaim, not an affirmative defense, but that a counterclaim will relate back to the time of filing of the original claim?
Only for that party's claim. It will relate back to that party's claim. In other words, this was a counterclaim that seeks affirmative relief, judicial foreclosure, which for the first time was asserted after the expiration of the statute of limitations.
What's your understanding of the procedural posture in the Simplot case of the counterclaim?
I don't recall specifically.
Okay, so you're not able to explain to us why we're reading that case incorrectly if we read it the way Judge Spearman just described.
I think the Rector case is more on point.
So that's how you would tell us that we shouldn't follow Simplot here?
Without studying it further, yes. If the Court wishes to have supplemental briefing, I'd be happy.
I'm not asking for supplemental briefing.
All right, thank you. Now, the bank also argues, in addition to the argument that the counterclaim should relate back to the filing of the action, also argues that the bankruptcy had some impact on it. The bank makes a number of arguments of why the bankruptcy impacts this. They claim, first of all, that the filing of bankruptcy is an acknowledgement of the debt and restarts the statute of limitations. That's easily resolved, because if that were the case, well, then every filing of bankruptcy.
You do agree, though, that the confirmation of the bankruptcy plan creates a new judgment, and if there is an acknowledgement within that of the debt, the statute of limitation runs anew from that point.
If that were the case, but that's not the case here.
You're not disputing the law. You're just saying factually, in this case, the residence at issue is not included within the bankruptcy plan.
And that begs the question of what does it mean to surrender an asset for bankruptcy?
Or acknowledge the debt.
Pardon me?
Or acknowledge the debt.
Well, as the Washington Appellate Court has said, the filing of bankruptcy is the antithesis of acknowledgement of a debt. It's a denial of a debt.
Well, it's not the filing of the bankruptcy. It's the confirmation of the bankruptcy plan that would constitute the acknowledgement.
But the plan didn't include a promise to pay this debt. To the contrary, the plan included the concept of surrender of the house. And that gets to the issue, the real issue, what does it mean to surrender a house?
But why would there be a surrender if there's not an acknowledgement of the debt?
Because if the debtor acknowledges the debt and wants to keep the house, the debtor has to make adequate security. In other words, have to demonstrate.
But to say it another way, you wouldn't surrender your house if you didn't owe the money.
Well, that's true in every case. In every case. So that still begs the question.
See, there's a third position. I'm not going to surrender the house, and I don't owe you the money.
Yeah, that would be a rare situation, but I suppose that theoretically could happen. That's not what happened here.
No, but if you're looking at what the plan represents in terms of acknowledging the debt, either you keep the house, acknowledge the debt, negotiate a repayment plan, you surrender the house, and you surrender the house because you acknowledge there's a debt but you don't want to pay it, or you keep the house and dispute whether there is any debt.
Well, the word acknowledgement.
Is there a fourth scenario I failed to identify?
Yeah, the word acknowledgement is somewhat troublesome because.
Why would you surrender the house if you didn't agree there was money owed?
But that would render one section of the code entirely meaningless.
Which one's that?
The section of the code, and I cited it in our reply, that says that if the statute of limitations runs on a claim while bankruptcy is pending and the stay is in effect, that the creditor has 30 days after the stay is lifted in order to file the claim, and the statute of limitations is told for that period of time, up to 30 days.
If the statute of limitations run, you would not be acknowledging a debt. You would be saying, I don't owe the money, because the statute of limitations is run.
Well, but the bankruptcy code gives a 30-day extension automatically, so a person can't take that position if the statute of limitations would otherwise expire while the stay was in effect, because the section of the code says they get a 30-day extension. So that would not be the case that you would be denying the debt. You'd be saying it was unenforceable. You'd still be listing the debt as a debt, as we did here. But then by surrendering the home, what is meant by that is not that you're acknowledging the debt, but rather you're saying that the creditor can proceed under state law, that the stay is lifted as to that creditor, and they proceed under state law.
So saying you're surrender the house doesn't mean you're going to give up possession.
No, it does not. But the bank's not arguing that either. The bank's not arguing that means you have to turn over the keys and move out in 20 days. What the bank's arguing is you can't defend against a state law foreclosure without violating the surrender. The surrender doesn't impose affirmative obligations. That's where the bank is wrong, is that surrender is simply notice to creditors that they are not including that asset in the estate.
You want to save your 2 minutes? Or?
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
If it pleases the Court, John Glowney on behalf of U.S. Bank. Mr. Tingwall filed a Chapter 11 proceeding and confirmed a Chapter 11 plan on February of 2012.
Does it make any difference it's a Chapter 11 and say a Chapter 13?
Well, a Chapter 13 might be different. A Chapter 7 is what I focused on, which is because statements of intent as to whether you're going to surrender property, redeem it, treat it as exempt, are given only in Chapter 7s. Chapter 11s is the significance here because a Chapter 11 substitutes all claims, all pre-confirmation claims are now in the Chapter 11 plan. And I've cited at pages 8 and 9 of our briefing 4 or 5 cases that say that's pretty standard. So when you confirm a plan in Chapter 11, which is what he did here, you have a whole new set of claims based upon that plan. That plan, in turn, under the law, is treated as a judgment of the federal court and as a contract. It's looked at both ways, but it's treated as a judgment, full faith and credit, preemption, because it's a bankruptcy court, but that now controls the rights of the parties. I can't, the creditor can't thereafter enforce a pre-confirmation a debt or obligation. They can enforce the plan obligation.
So we look to the terms of the plan to determine what judgment you can enforce.
Well, the plan, yes, you can enforce that plan.
Okay,
but
so what judgment did the plan give the bank here?
The plan, well, the defense here is that the statute of limitations ran. That's what's been raised in this state court action, that the statute of limitations ran on the old note back.
And you're not pursuing that debt, as I understand your argument. You're pursuing a judgment that follows, or something that is the equivalent of a judgment that flows from the plan. And what is it in the plan that you are enforcing?
That they will surrender the property. And the bargain was, we will not enforce your personal obligation. Your personal liability is discharged. We get the property, you surrender it. But the question really for the court is the statute, what statute of limitations applies. He's been arguing as if the statute of limitations applied to the note obligation under the state law is the statute. That's not the statute that applies. Washington has a statute, RCW 416-0202, which applies a 10-year statute to any judgment of any federal court. This is a bankruptcy judgment. So, therefore, the 10-year statute applies.
So, are there the words that he will surrender the house are the judgment that has a 10-year life?
It is, yes, Your Honor, because that's the – we are entitled to enforce our rights in the plan. He will surrender it. If he's not raising some other defense here. He's raising only the statute of limitations. He's not saying
now,
you're procedurally
he
incorrect.
He has said, as I understood him in oral argument here, that saying I'll surrender isn't the same as agreeing to relinquish possession.
And that's generally correct, Judge, because
so what does surrender mean that you, the bank, can make him do?
It means that he gives up his legal rights to interfere with the foreclosure. That's what he surrendered. He surrendered any legal rights to say, I'm going to keep this house. The bank isn't required, it's a little more involved discussion, but the bank may not want property for some reasons. It may be contaminated, there may be some problems. They may choose not to do it. But from the debtor's side, he has his legal rights to interfere with the There's not a lot of case law under Chapter 11.
It's a very obscure use of language to get to what would be a pretty simple thing to describe.
Well, this is the bankruptcy court, so they
But the lawyers write the plan.
Pardon?
Some lawyer wrote this plan. Mr. Tingvall's a lawyer, so if he wrote it, it still was authored by a lawyer. And it strikes me if you're a creditor and you don't like the wording of the plan, you go in and tell the court, this isn't acceptable, but if you'd say this, it would be. Just saying I'll surrender something seems like an awfully vague or subtle way to say the bank's free to foreclose if it wants to.
Well, I do think that's what it's saying, but what he's doing is really trying to make a hybrid. He's saying, I'm doing Chapter 11 as all my other assets. Oh, but I didn't really tell you. I kind of pulled out this one, and I want to treat this as a Chapter 7 because I want to keep my rights under the note pre-confirmation. I want you to treat this piece of property as a Chapter 7, but everything else is under Chapter 11. No authority exists for doing hybrid plans. You're either Chapter 11 or you're Chapter 7. He went Chapter 11.
Is there a requirement that you include all of your debts and property within the plan as opposed to abandoning some?
You could do that, but he didn't. He put it in the plan. And yes, you could. And it does happen. And had he done so, that would be we'd be a different posture here. But that's not the plan he wrote. Now, it, because a plan is treated like a contract, if there's a question of interpretation, then we have a question of interpretation. What does it mean to surrender? And that happens in contracts. You know, as we all know, that's part of my business. We have contract disputes over what the language may or may not mean all the time. But I don't think in the bankruptcy context it has a whole lot of – it doesn't raise a lot of concern with me. It simply means we get to foreclose and he can't interfere. But he certainly doesn't have a statute of limitations defense. And that's the only thing he's risen.
And your argument is that he doesn't have the statute of limitation defense because there's a 10-year statute of limitations.
It's either a 10-year statute.
Argument?
Yeah. And I cited there's that one case that has said it's because it's a contract, we'll apply the state 6-year statute, but they both trigger from February of 2012. So under either a 10-year or a 6-year statute, because that's the new obligation, then it's a 10-year, 6-year, we're still good.
When the case was presented below and the state court decided it, it seemed to me that the trial court decided on a different theory than the one that you're arguing now.
I'm not sure how much the trial court judge reflected the bankruptcy concept. I think it should have because it really
what's wrong with the analysis that Simplot says if the plaintiff's complaint is filed before the statute of limitations, the effective date of any counterclaim asserted in that same litigation is the date the complaint was filed?
There's nothing wrong with that. I'm perfectly fine with that, except that the court has to recognize, I think, that the bankruptcy plan...
Well, there's a problem with it from what you've just said in that you've told us that debt doesn't exist anymore. The only debt available to the bank is the judgment from the bankruptcy plan.
But that is to enforce the turnover of the property. So...
Well, how could you sue on the note anymore?
You can't sue on the note. You can simply identify that was the original basis, and you can sue to collect the property through foreclosure.
Arguing that you have a judgment under the bankruptcy plan.
Because he agreed to surrender it under the bankruptcy plan. So... and if you're simply looking at the bankruptcy, back to something this court discussed a little bit earlier with opposing counsel, if you simply applied state law to say, well, what's the effect of agreeing to a Chapter 11 plan? Well, you've agreed to a loan you've really modified the loan. We've said, we're going to change our terms of our deal. We're not going to get you personally, because you were personally on the note, and you're going to agree to surrender the property, which you didn't have to do before.
So you've
modified it under state law. Under state law, you've restarted the statute under state law for a 6-year contract. So under any of those versions, filing that counterclaim in whatever it was, June of 2015, is timely because under a 10-year or 6-year statute, it's a timely filing. If there are further issues to address, you know, what surrender means, then maybe there's further issues to address in a trial court. But there is no statute of limitations under any spin of these facts. And I would simply argue to the court that I think the right result is that the bankruptcy plan governs and that he's agreed to surrender the property. And then the question is that unclear? So I think that's the point I'd like to make this morning to this panel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
A couple follow-up points. First of all, neither the plan nor the judgment imposed any affirmative obligations on plaintiffs. It was the negative of an obligation. It was that the plan says that the debtors have decided to surrender the home. And surrender the home is not a word chosen by the parties. It's in the bankruptcy code.
He tells us that surrender includes can't assert as a defense the statute of limitations.
Well, that would be an interesting result because I would argue that's contrary to public policy, and that's what the judges who've interpreted surrender as merely notice instead of being an affirmative obligation have said, that it's contrary to public policy to put a debtor in a position, a worse position, for having filed for bankruptcy and not being able to assert personal defenses in a state court action that they could have asserted without the bankruptcy. In other words, the debtor in bankruptcy who's supposed to get a fresh start.
But isn't your situation different because the bankruptcy has relieved you from personal liability, and the only asset available to satisfy the bank's debt is the house itself. So you're not in a worse position as a result of the bankruptcy.
I'm not. I don't agree that we're relieved of personal obligation for the note.
Well, he said you would be.
Well, but I don't agree with that. That's not true. All the bankruptcy court did by surrendering the house is saying, as to the house, it's as though the bankruptcy didn't exist. That's the way to look at a surrender. A surrender is, as to that asset, it's as though the bankruptcy didn't exist. So you're left with the note deed of trust.
Would it be your view then that the bankruptcy plan created a judgment for the personal liability on the note as well?
No, there's no obligation, affirmative obligation, in either the plan or the judgment. And the bank has not drawn the court's attention to any such language in either the plan or the judgment, the confirmation of the plan.
Can the plan not deal with all of the debtor's debt?
Yes, but how it dealt with the house is to say it's surrendered. And the bank, it's as though the bankruptcy doesn't exist as to the house. And the bank can proceed with whatever state court remedies it has. And I don't agree that we're released from personal liability, not on a Chapter 11. If the house is surrendered, then that means the court can proceed, I mean, the creditor can proceed with whatever remedies it has under the note and deed of trust.
But there's no deficiency. I mean, Keith, you're relieved of that, are you not?
No. No, if the bank elects judicial foreclosure.
So if the bank sold the house and there's still money owed on the judgment, they can come after you?
There could be. On Chapter 11, that's correct. The debt is not discharged. As to surrendered assets, as to a surrendered house, the debt is not discharged. The debt remains in place. So what they've got to go on is the note and deed of trust, not the plan, not the judgment. Those are negatives. They don't impose any affirmative obligation whatsoever. Not a new obligation.
You've answered my question.
Thank you.